gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's that feeling of impending doom that you feel in the pit of your stomach of free speech. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed funds where? To 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators are standing by. All right, Mark, we have Mark Collett with us. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. We're waking up to a brave new world. Well, in Europe anyway. And I've been blown away. I was on a stream last night and the news was coming in that although the counting is still taking place, apparently, for the European elections, which are basically all across the EU, which no longer includes the UK because of Brexit, but those results are incredible, and there has been a seismic shift towards what the press are calling far-right parties. Now, obviously, you and I can discuss slightly at length, if you like, whether we would call those far-right parties, because that's an important point. You know, how do they stack up to the things that, you know, we believe, that we desire from a politician? We can talk about that as well, but it is incredible to see this kind of swing towards parties that make their biggest talking points about demographics. Now, the most sensational result was in France, because I've just Googled it, and the time we're recording here is midday on Monday UK time, and at midday Monday UK time, when you attempt to Google this situation, what you get is a message saying counting still in progress. So at this point, it appears that the count is still undergoing, that the results haven't fully come in as of yet. But at the moment, Marine Le Pen's party, the National Rally, as it is now called, is basically doing so well and is so far ahead in the polls, and people who are there, counting agents for the other parties, are predicting such an epic win for Marine Le Pen that Macron has already conceded defeat but gone a step further. He's actually dissolved Parliament. He's dissolved French Parliament and says, look, we need a general election, because the weight of public sympathy toward Marine Le Pen's party is at such an all-time high, we don't really have, you know, his party and the current sort of liberal left coalition don't really have a mandate to rule anymore. And this is incredible, because I don't think I've ever seen this in my whole life. I don't think I've ever seen a parliament being dissolved during an election campaign, because the weight of public support is so incredibly in favour of a quote-unquote far-right party, which tells you something very, very interesting. Although white people in France are rapidly heading towards minority status, they are more or less in their entirety, well, not in their entirety, but in an overwhelming majority, appear to be voting for a party that wants to deal with this demographic shift, that wants to stop immigration, that wants to start deportations, and wants to reverse what they see happening to France. And I've never seen such a shift in my lifetime. And the last time we've had a shift of this magnitude would probably be back in the 1930s or 1920s, when obviously so-called fascist parties were on the rise all over Europe. This is very, very interesting, extremely interesting times to be living in. And obviously, this is just the beginning, because this is 2024 and we're in June. But we've got an American presidential election coming up. We've got a British general election coming up in under a month now. And let's face it, things are going to get a lot spicier before the year is out. Well, I think they will anyway.
There's all sorts of things. I mean, we're going to have an interesting summer in the United States, not just with the two conventions that are going to happen, where certainly the Democratic convention, which is 2 months from now, looks like there will be a lot of protests. In fact, you had just, I think over the weekend, you had the news reported 30,000 demonstrators surrounding the White House with some sort of red banner. They're saying, you know, that Biden is letting Netanyahu cross all of the red lines. Well, here's a red line. That's a pretty big deal. You know, the Trump is being called out to his face by some of his high profile supporters. And there's the possibility that there's going to be more of that coming up this coming weekend when he is at a conference of I guess it's Charlie Kirk's organization, but it's also being held in the same town as Nick Fuentes is going to have a conference. And, you know, I guess last week did I mention that the UFC legend, Khabib, long last name guy,
Nurmagomedov.
Nurmagomedov. So he challenged Donald Trump on Gaza. You've had other people challenge Donald Trump to his face, and who knows what's going to happen in Detroit with these conferences. And a lot of erstwhile Trump supporters there who are very dismayed at his position regarding Israel. Now, as for French politics, the French have a system where you've got a president who nowadays is elected for 5-year terms. So when it's the French Fifth Republic, when it was established in, 1958, 59, under Charles de Gaulle, they had 7-year terms and what seemed to be a pretty powerful president. But the thing is, there's a prime minister. In some systems, like Russia, that have a president and a prime minister, the president appoints the prime minister and then can fire the prime minister. In France, the president appoints the prime minister, but it has to appoint somebody who's going to have a majority of parliament. The prime minister is responsible to parliament. And but the president cannot dismiss the prime minister. Currently, you've got some gay Jew as prime minister, some young gay Jew. Before that, you had a Jewish old lady who was... It's weird. It's weird. And the gay Jew appointed as foreign minister because it's the prime minister appoints the cabinet members or recommends cabinet ministers for the president. I guess the president formally appoints them. But the gay prime minister appointed his former lover as foreign minister only in France. But you can have a situation where the president and the prime minister are from different parties, and different sides of the aisle who are opponents of each other. This first happened in the 1990s when the socialist François Mitterrand was the president, and his rival, Jacques Chirac, a longtime rival with the Gaullist party, won legislative elections and became prime minister for a couple of years under a socialist president. And the prime minister winds up having a lot of sway over what happens with domestic policy. It happened again, in this century. I don't know if it can happen, like Marine Le Pen can get enough support where she or somebody in her party is going to wind up as prime minister. But we'll see. When are the elections scheduled for?
I'm not actually sure. I don't know how it works in France. Now, I know how it works in the UK, in that the UK prime minister has the prerogative to call the election. And obviously that must be the same in France, because what we're seeing in France appears to be almost a facsimile of what's happened in Britain with Rishi Sunak. However, I will say this, I'm not exactly sure how it works in France, how long people are given, because in the UK, it's actually a pretty tight time scale, considering we've got our election coming up in less than a month. So it was only called about a week or so ago, and the election day is already less than a month away, which gives candidates very, very little time. So a snap general election in the UK is actually a tool whereby a mainstream party can essentially hamper small parties who are attending to stand, because it's a lot harder for small parties to prepare themselves for a snap general election in the UK due to the tight timescales. And interestingly, there has been major developments with the snap general election in the UK, which we can discuss in a minute. But I'm not actually sure what the situation is in France. But I will say this. I'm talking about small parties in the UK, but I don't think Marine Le Pen's national rally would be considered a small party in France. I think it would be considered, you know, one of the three largest parties. So I don't think she will have any trouble getting candidates onto the ballot papers or getting all the leaflets ready and doing all of the, well, I mean, she personally won't be doing any of that, I'm sure, but she will have an entire organization set up around doing those kind of things. It becomes a problem for small parties when they are not a professional party. But a long time ago, the before she even took the reins, the Front National had become a professional staffed organization with a, you know, full-time party managers, etc., etc., etc. And because of that, I'm very much sure that she won't have a problem meeting this. Now, the interesting thing about this election will be the nature of it. Now, she's done very well in the European elections, but the European elections usually have a much lower turnout. And on top of having a lower turnout, they also are done on a form of proportional representation. Now, this can lead to an interesting situation. So here's an example. In 2014, UKIP did extremely well at the European elections. And this actually led to Brexit. This is what caused the Conservative Party to get very worried and say, look, to harm UKIP, what we'll do is we will offer people a referendum on membership of the European Union, which they did. And obviously, we know how that turned out. However, after the 2014 Euro election, UKIP was at its height and was doing amazing things in terms of pulling in votes. And they went into the general election on a high. And the BNP, I don't believe, stood a single candidate. So there wasn't any opposition to UKIP. There wasn't any sort of right-wing opposition. They weren't having their votes sucked away by another smaller organization. And they went into that election and took 3.9 million votes. And that 3.9 million votes translated to about 12.6% of the voter base. And for that, UKIP managed to take one solitary parliamentary seat, which you might think, well, that's bad, but it actually manages to get worse, because not only did they only take one seat, it wasn't actually their seat. It was a Conservative Party seat that was the seat of a guy called Douglas Carswell, who had crossed the floor to make a protest, and he retained his seat largely using, I should imagine, his parliamentary expenditure in order to defend his seat. And on defending his seat in that manner, Carswell then promptly left the party. So it wasn't really, at the time it was a scandal, because people were saying, well, this is completely undemocratic. How can a party get this many votes yet get no representation? Well, you know, the party doesn't get any representation because it's designed not to get any representation. That's first past the post. And also there's increased turnout, et cetera, et cetera. And at European elections, parties generally, people generally vote differently. They use the European election because they don't see the European Parliament as, you know, as credible as their own, you know, home parliament. So they use that election to essentially voice their concerns on other issues such as immigration, and they vote slightly differently to how they would vote in domestic elections. So although Marine Le Pen has done very well in this election, I'm cautiously optimistic about the future for the French elections, because if they do a UKIP where they essentially dominate the elections, you know, the European elections, they might end up not dominating when it comes to a first-past-the-post election. Because remember, in a first-past-the-post election, it's the candidate with the most votes that win. So if you have 11 candidates and one candidate takes 10% of the vote and the other 10 candidates all take an equal share, that basically means 90% of voters have their wishes ignored. And at that point, these elections do become extremely unfair. And you can see that here in the UK, as I said, with UKIP. Now, I'm just looking up the European parliamentary election. And yes, in 2014, UKIP won the... did they win the European election? Or was it the Conservatives? Let me just check. UKIP, yeah, won that election with 24 seats, but it resulted in them only taking one seat in British Parliament. So, as I say, I'm not trying to pour, you know, water on this fire, and I'm not saying that Marine Le Pen will do terribly or that it's all over or, you know, Macron's going to do well and come out of nowhere, but there is a precedent for people voting very differently at European elections than they do at their own general elections. And also, there's generally a higher turnout, which is something that hurts smaller parties. So this could well be that people, you know, I'm not saying this is the case, but in the UK, we have seen UKIP and the Brexit Party both win parliamentary elections, but both have then failed to win any seats in Parliament at subsequent general elections, despite relatively strong showings at those general elections, which is obviously one of these sort of quirks of the electoral system, which often frustrates nationalist organisations.
Right. So I was able to check, and the French National Assembly elections, the first round of voting will be on June 30th, and then the second on July 7th. So they are coming up real fast. I know for president, they have two rounds as well. You have to get 50% or more. And yet that, and so for instance, in past elections, three times you've had the Marine Le Pen's party or her father's party be one of the top two vote getters and wind up in a runoff against in Marine Le Pen's case, she's been the candidate against Macron both times. And she, you know, both times in the second round, she came up short. She and so this might well be a problem for them in their National Assembly elections in a way it wasn't in the European elections, the way you as you explained it. So my assumption, and I'll probably be able to check this by the end of the show, is that candidates in the legislative elections that are going to be held, that they all, you know, in the second round, it's going to be the top two vote getters. And then they're, so there's no guarantee that the national Marine Le Pen's national rally is going to be able to get majoritarian support. But we'll see.
This is the problem. This is the problem with these first past the post or more contrived systems of voting, is that they tend to be done in such a way that any kind of like support for, say, a populist right party can be swamped at some stage. And that's why I'm not getting too excited. And it's why I personally am not looking at this in terms of, oh, you know, she's going to get a landslide victory. Now, I'm not saying she won't do well, and I certainly don't want to be the guy that's pouring scorn on this effort or the guy that's saying it can't be done. But you have to look at things through, you know, through a proper historical lens of things that have happened and look at precedent in the past. Now, obviously, new precedent can be set at any time, and we could well see new precedent being set here. I hope it is. But I personally am sort of far more cautious when I see these elections coming up, because I know what's happened in the past. And I don't know how the French assembly elections work. But if what you're saying is correct, that in each seat there's two rounds of voting, like there is for the presidential election, so you actually need a majority, a genuine majority, to get in. That, in some ways, could obviously be argued to be a good thing, because it's, you know, the people who get elected are more representative of, you know, the people who have voted. So you can't have somebody just sneak in with 10-11% of the vote, as I talked about earlier. However, the problem with this is I can imagine.
Get More Tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A five-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
People who have voted, so you can't have somebody just sneak in with 10-11% of the vote, as I talked about earlier. However, the problem with this is I can imagine that Marine Le Pen's party will face the runoffs in nearly every single seat and then get potentially defeated on a catastrophic level, because the issue you have here is if you've got sort of 49% of people saying they're willing to vote for Marine Le Pen across the country, 49% of people, you could technically then end up with, despite 49% of people wanting to vote for her and supporting her, you could end up with her not getting a single seat in Parliament, because the 51% work together to completely lock them out of Parliament, which, you know, that sounds grim. What I've just said sounds absolutely grim. And I'm sure people at home will be saying, blimey, Elmar, that would be terrible. But that's exactly the kind of thing that happens. You know, if she was to face that kind of, you know, concerted effort to lock her out of power, it would work. And it would mean that there would be some, again, unholy liberal coalition in power. And 49% of the French population would effectively be ignored. And this is why any form of first-past-the-post voting inherently leads to an unfortunate situation where you can end up with a vaster, you know, a sizable proportion of people who are ignored. Now, the British system is seems worse than the French system in many ways. But this French system could see lots of people very, very disappointed the day after the election. Now, I am sure that she will win some seats. I'm sure she will get a majority in some areas. But I'm sure in other areas you will have, you know, socialist, liberal, degenerate whites collaborating with Muslims, collaborating with ethnic minorities, collaborating with the LGBT lobby, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to essentially lock her out of power completely. And at that point, you know, she's got a big problem there, because how do you keep fighting these elections in the face of that when fundamentally France at the moment is facing the same demographic nightmare as Britain and America, where the number of people voting who are white gets smaller and smaller with every electoral cycle due to demographic change. So this is going to be very interesting. Now, obviously, I hope I'm wrong saying this. I hope that, you know, the precedent that we have seen in the past does not continue. And I'm very much hoping that it's smashed. But also what you've got to remember is, from our point of view, Marine Le Pen does get some things right. She gets the issues of demographics right. But she is also an ardent Zionist. And she is a massive supporter of the State of Israel, which fundamentally does put her at odds with probably the vast majority of people listening to this show. And she is certainly not the same kind of man as her father, who is somebody who was ardent anti-Zionist, somebody who spoke about Jewish power, and somebody who supported people of really all colours and cultures in France who spoke out against Zionism.
Somebody who hosted a birthday party for David Duke. That was her father.
He's also, indeed, and also, let's add to that, he's also the man that supported, I forget the guy's name, he's a black gentleman, he's a comedian, and he came up...
Oh, yeah, and he had that salute.
He came up with the quenelle, that little, that funky salute.
Yeah, Dudonné.
That's the one.
Dudonné. Yeah, he's exactly. He's half Cameroonian. Yeah.
And Dudonné. So... You know, her father was somebody who was cut from a, you know, not a completely different cloth, but he was anti-LGBT, he was anti-Israel, and she has embraced, you know, LGBT to some degree as almost as a French, you know, as almost a French value to say, look, you know, the Islamic population coming here, the migrant population, they don't embrace LGBT, and we embrace the LGBT, and because of this, they're not the same as us. Well, you know, I find that kind of a little bit sickening. You know, it's kind of like you are in a very real way completely cucking on, you know, what the values of the party used to be. And you can see with that kind of policy creep, it's exactly the same thing that happened to the Conservatives. And we attack mainstream Conservatives for selling out. And I've seen nationalists saying, oh, no, she's just playing the game. But I'm sure there's a lot of mainstream Conservatives who say to their supporters, no, keep voting for us. They're just playing the game. Well, okay, you know, there's just playing the game, but that's what every party says who is selling out. Every party who sells out attempts to convince their supporters that the party is just playing the game. But what the game is, we've never actually known, because for all these years they've been playing the game, they've never ever done what their supporters have hoped and said, ha-ha, now we've played the game and won, we're going to implement the policies that the people really want. You know, that's not how playing the game works. Playing the game has never ever resulted in a party coming like face out and saying, ha ha, this was just all of our nefarious plan. We are now going to clamp down on LGBTism and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm against her, and I'm happy this has happened. And when I woke up this morning, it was a nice big fat white pill as I was eating my cornflakes. But I didn't have cornflakes, actually. I had Marmite on toast. But the point is, when it comes down to it, I hold a degree of trepidation about numerous.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Fat white pill as I was eating my cornflakes, but I didn't have cornflakes actually, I had Marmite on toast. But the point is, when it comes down to it, I hold a degree of trepidation about numerous things to do with Marine Le Pen, and obviously one of those things is quite clearly the fact that she cucks, and the other one is that fundamentally the system of first past the post elections there could result in the national rally taking 49% of the vote nationally, but getting no representation. Now, as I said, that's very unlikely to happen completely in the way I've just stated, but I think that could happen in many areas. And I think what you're going to end up seeing, and we saw this in the UK on a local level with parties like the British National Party. So when I used to be in the British National Party, other parties would stand aside at local elections. So if the BNP looked like they were going to win in a particular area, then in one, so say there was two seats next to each other, we'll call them Ward A and Ward B. And in Ward A, Labour get 30% of the vote, Lib Dems get 30% of the vote. So the BNP only need 40% of the vote to win. And in the next ward, or they need 35% of the vote to win. Let's say that Labour get 30%. Lib Dems get 30%, BNP need 35% to win, and then the Tories get 5% because it's a white working class, sort of traditional sort of Labour area. That happened. And then if Ward B has exactly the same kind of makeup. So the ward next door, Ward B, because so there's two of them, has exactly the same makeup. 30% for Lib Dems, 30% for Labour, 5% for the Tories. So essentially, again, the BNP only need 35% to gain victory. What would happen, and this is incredibly unfair, is in Ward A, Labour would say, look, we're standing aside and we'll tell everyone to vote Lib Dem in this ward. And then in Ward B, Lib Dems would say, well, we're standing aside and we'll tell everyone to vote Labour. So Labour would get one candidate. Lib Dems would get one candidate. The BNP would get no candidates. When had the elections been conducted in the way that elections had always been conducted in that area, with Lib Dems and Labour both standing, the BNP would have got two councillors elected and Lib Dems and Labour would have got none. And that's how they came to these, I mean, what can you call it? Undemocratic. They came to these undemocratic, what would you call it? Coalitions, agreements, pacts, in order to lock political parties out of power. So there are all of these things that people must fundamentally understand about the electoral route before they start celebrating about wins that haven't happened yet. And this might, to a lot of people, be really irritating what I'm saying. People might be like, oh my God, Mark, you know, we've come here for the good news. I woke up just like you, saw that, you know, things were happening in France. I was super, super happy, stoked about it. And you're here with the bad news. Well, I don't really call it bad news for a start. I call it fundamentally, you know, the truth. This is how elections actually work. And they actually work this way because they were designed to work this way. They work this way because they were designed so that if there was a small outsider party who threatened the mainstream in any way, this kind of thing could take place on a mass scale to ensure that small outsider party would never, ever gain any form of legislative power. And we've seen this again and again in the UK, and I believe that it wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility for it to happen in France as well. But there is another big issue. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about this, but there's been another massive development.
I get a little nerdy about numbers. Marine Le Pen, let's look at the recent presidential elections as the first round and second round as kind of a guide. So Marine Le Pen, she's come in second place in the last presidential elections in 2022, and then the one before that, 2017. She ran in the two previous elections, but didn't come in second place. Her father came in second place in 2002, and I just want to use that as a bit of a starting point. So in the 2002 elections, this illustrates the type of thing you're talking about. In the first round, you had over a dozen candidates. The top vote getter was the incumbent Jacques Chirac, who got 19.9%. And in second place, Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father, got 17.9%. So 19.9%, 17.9%, and the other 60% of the vote was split up by over a dozen candidates. But what happens in the second round? Jean-Marie Le Pen, he moves all the way up from 16.9% of the vote to 17.8% of the vote. And Jacques Chirac goes from 19.9% to 82.2%. So like everybody who didn't vote for Jean-Marie Le Pen, just about everybody in the second round just voted for Jacques Chirac. So that's kind of the starting point. Since 2007, Marine Le Pen, the daughter, has been the presidential candidate. In 2007, she got more or less the same vote that her father got, but then she's been getting progressively more. And in the last election, the 2022 election, the first round, let's get down to the first round here. And hold on just a second. I'm sorry. We'll get it. Hold on just a second. I just lost it. I'll get it back. So in the first round, the incumbent Macron, the guy who's the president now, got 27.9%, and Le Pen got 23.2%. So they're pretty close in the first round. But in the second round, you still had the bulk of the voters who had voted for other candidates going towards Macron, but Le Pen picked up a lot of support. So she went from 23.2 all the way up to 41.5. So it's not like the case of her father. Whether her party, and this is not a presidential election we're talking about, but I'm just using this as a guide. And I look at a map of France, broken down by their departments, their provinces. And in the first round, you see almost half the country is colored in blue for Le Pen, and the other half is colored in yellow for Macron. And when you click on the second round, a lot of what had been blue goes to yellow. But you still have, in the second round of the presidential election, you still had a fair number of areas where Macron, where Le Pen was getting a majority. So that was a long way of saying, who knows? I mean, I think what you're saying is valid and most likely the outcome, because the second round is going to be, first past the post. And that disadvantage that has in the past several elections, that has disadvantaged Le Pen's party. But Le Pen's party has been picking up more and more mainstream support over these past 20 years. And so you never know. That was a long way of saying that. Now I'll kick it back to you.
Look, I think you've made very good statistical points. However, you see, what I'm trying not to do here, I am happy about what's happened. You can trust me on that. I want to see the system smashed. And I know she's not our perfect candidate. I know she's pro-Zionist, et cetera, et cetera. I know she wouldn't call herself a white ethno-nationalist, but that might be because of laws in France that fundamentally prevent people from calling themselves things like that. So, I'm not pouring scorn on this woman in any way, shape or form. And I'm certainly not saying that, Macron or the establishment in France is a better bet than she is. I'd pick her every day of the week over the likes of Emmanuel Macron. However, I am just trying to point out that the electoral system has presented nationalists with these tantalizing, what looks like tantalizing chance to grasp victory many times over, only for the nationalists to realize then just how stacked the system is against, nationalists in that particular sphere, in the sphere of actually voting. So I am a little bit concerned about that. But there has been a very, very interesting development with the UK general election, which could actually swing the election and completely alter the outcome of UK politics forever, which, if we've got time, we could discuss that briefly.
Let's do it.
Well, guess who's back, Patrick?
Nigel Farage.
He is back. But do you know what? I don't know if you've watched my weekly video on it, because I did a weekly video on this. And the reason this is interesting is because fundamentally, Farage is back, but he's unlikely to win any seats. Or if he does win seats, they will be few and far between. Again, this is because of the quirk of the electoral system, because of first past the post, and because the fact first past the post is inherently undemocratic. And he knows this because we spoke earlier about UKIP and the fact that UKIP, despite getting this sort of record number of votes, UKIP ended up in a situation where they didn't get a single fresh seat elected, and the only seat they won was a Tory defector, Douglas Carswell, that we mentioned earlier. So this is very interesting that Farage is choosing to stand. And I'm not suggesting his new party, the Reform Party, because it's no longer UKIP. It was Brexit Party, then it became the Reform Party. I'm not suggesting that Nigel Farage can or is going to win any seats. But there is another interesting quirk of the electoral system. And that is, because it's first past the post, coalitions or spoiler candidates can destroy mainstream parties. And what I'm suggesting may well happen in Britain is that although the Brexit Party might not get a single seat elected, and that historically
it's called, I just want to clarify, is it called Brexit now or Reform?
Oh, sorry, I got the Reform Party. The Reform Party basically is the Brexit Party. Brexit Party was rebranded as the Reform Party. So my apologies. Mm. So whilst the Reform Party has completely, may completely fail to get a single seat elected, we are in a situation where fundamentally, despite that, we could end up seeing the Reform Party taking 5 to 10% of the vote in a lot of seats. And that 5 to 10% will result in no tangible gains for Reform. But that 5 to 10% that they take will be 5 to 10% that would have come from the Conservative Party. And this will then place the Conservative Party in a very, very unenviable position, meaning that every single marginal constituency in the country where it's on a knife edge and where the depressed Tory vote could hand victory to the Labour Party will swing Labour. Because you see, your average hardcore Labour voter isn't going to vote Reform, but they may well. But the average hardcore Tory party voter would vote for Reform. And this is going to leave the Labour Party in a very, very good position, and the Tory Party facing a sort of 1993 Canadian Conservative Party collapse, where it could be completely wiped off the map, to the point now that some pundits are saying that the Conservative Party will be left with somewhere between, you know, 100 and as few as 20 seats in Parliament, and that Rishi Sunak himself could face the ultimate defeat and actually lose his seat. And this will be down to Farage. Now, I don't think this is because Farage necessarily hates Conservatives or wants to destroy the Conservative Party. In fact, quite the opposite. I think he'd have loved to have been embraced by the Conservative Party, but they have repeatedly snubbed him in all of his attempts to form a coalition so that he could gain more power and more influence for himself. And because of that, he is now on a mission to almost kamikaze them. You know, he knows he isn't going to end up leading majority in Parliament. He knows that he's unlikely to get elected himself. But by leading the Reform Party and by making the election all about mass immigration, he actually stands to destroy the Conservatives, ensuring that they lose in every single marginal constituency in the country. So, and the Conservatives just released an internal memo stating that they are classifying some 200 of their existing seats as what they would call vulnerable. So, under threat, vulnerable, there's, you know, we're going to lose it, basically. But the fact that 200 are classified as vulnerable puts them in a position that they've probably never been in before. Or the last time they were in this position was 1997, when Tony Blair swept to victory. But this looks even more grim than 1997, and people are predicting that Keir Starmer could win somewhere between 500 and 550 seats in Parliament, you know, meaning that the sum total of any opposition in Parliament would be between 100 and 150 other sitting MPs, which would effectively grant Labour the right to more or less pass any policy they wished with virtually no opposition. And even if the main opposition to the Labour Party was their own backbench who began pulling away, even if 10 to 20% of that party went with a breakaway backbench faction, the party would still pass any legislation without any form of trouble. And that is frightening, because I know that the Conservative Party are bad, but I do think the Conservative Party have always been somewhat constrained in what they do by their own voters who largely aren't in league with their, you know, draconian liberal anti-white policy making. But that wouldn't be the case for Labour, who the vast majority of Labour activists are in fact horrible, you know, anti-white liberal vile pieces of work who would want people like me locking up and my children taken away from me, you know, and dumped into re-education camps just because I have a different political opinion. So this presents, on one hand, a wonderful opportunity to see that horrible Conservative Party smashed to pieces once and for all. But on the other hand, this presents, you know, potentially an incredible challenge for nationalists, who will then be fighting some, you know, legal rearguard action to prevent their organisations being outlawed and potentially to prevent issues of demographics becoming part of race hate laws, which would prevent us talking about things such as you know, whether we were a white majority or white minority. So, you know, potential reasons for celebration here, but also plenty of things on the horizon that should make nationalists feel slightly uncomfortable.
Indeed. So even, I mean, even without Nigel Farage, the conservatives looked like they were headed to a ignominious defeat. There was already talk about them, you know, losing or being down to, say, 150 seats or something. But some of those seats that they might have just barely squeaked by in without Nigel Farage, with Nigel Farage being...
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Say 150 seats or something. But some of those seats that they might have just barely squeaked by in without Nigel Farage, with Nigel Farage being, I guess he's not technically the leader of the Reform Party, but he is the poster child for. Is he the leader now?
He's The Reform Party, the way it's constituted, is that Nigel was always the man who held the power, but he could dedicate or sort of, you know, give the power of leader to somebody else as and when necessary. So he had previously handed the leadership reins to a guy called Richard Tice. As and when he decided to, he could always just pick up the reins, which he did because of the way the party's constituted. It's effectively his party and he legally owns it. So what we've got here...
That's interesting.
Yeah, okay. So what we've got here is he was just sat waiting for, you know, a time to come when it was right and it was a good time to pounce. And then he was like, right, I'm in control now. Thank you, Richard. You're deputy leader again. I'm taking control. I'm standing. And let's go full bore to destroy the Conservatives, which is his goal. And, you know, I've got to say, I'm not completely against that, obviously. I'm, as you can tell from my... my attitude towards this, I'm quite happy at the thought of destroying the Conservatives, but quite nervous at the thought of a Labour majority that is that great. But I think you're right. The Conservatives may have ended up with something like 150 to 175 seats in Parliament. Before Farage came back, there was talk of it potentially being a hung Parliament, of Labour maybe having to form a coalition with the likes of the SNP. And there was lots of issues which potentially threw a spanner in the works and would have prevented Keir Starmer from taking some unholy number of seats, which would have given him almost dictatorial power. However, with the return of Farage, things are looking very different now. And, you know, there are a number of conspiracy theories, I mean, when I say conspiracy theories, I should just call them theories, that suggest that the establishment is looking to go into all-out war with Russia. And, you know, this is all playing into the hands of that, because it would grant Labour the kind of, you know, numbers they would need to make it look like it was a unified force going for war, which the Conservatives could never have done because they were too heavily damaged. In the terms of public perception. So, yeah, I think this is going to be very interesting. And I think that fundamentally, we are going to see a huge, huge, huge sea change in British politics. And it's largely going to be because, you know, Farage has fundamentally decided to re-enter this race or re-enter... You will enter this race and re-enter politics, should I say.
Okay. Well, we'll have to check in again next week. We're out of time for this week, but there's certainly a lot of developments. So I want to thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me on, Patrick. It's always a real pleasure, and I look forward to discussing this further with you as things develop. And obviously, in the coming months, we're going to see Britain, we're going to see France, and later in the year, we're going to see America go to the polls. And we could be seeing, I'm not saying a repeat of 2016, but we could be seeing the kind of energy we experienced back then when it was Brexit, when it was Marine Le Pen, when it was Donald Trump. It seems as if the stars are aligning once more.
We'll see. We'll see. And sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for. Well,
indeed.
Thank you very much, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Digital Radio.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.